Simon Mayo's Confessions.
The podcast.
Greatest Hits Radio.
Well, this will be a Confessions podcast, then, courtesy of Greatest Hits Radio, where incredibly sinful members of our audience gather to tell their tales of decrepitude. That's basically what it boils down
to.
Yeah. They seek dispensation from Sister Susie from the pub, who usually says no. And Brother Matt, who, because he comes from a sewer, usually says
yes.
Fair enough. This week's collection is the second of your three bumper summer editions, which includes some of our favourite tales that we've had on the show since we started again in March. So here we go with confession number one, and it's one of only two confessions that Matt has not forgiven.
Wow, really? Okay.
That's absolutely right.
He
has not forgiven. Here is Jonty's confession.
Oh, Jonty. Yeah, right, there you go. There you go.
That's the answer.
Which is called You Better Watch Out, You Better Beware, Al Said E equals MC Squared. Jonty, you're pushing this uphill here. Father Simon and the Collected Confessional Cardinals, your school-related story a while back about the stolen clay owl, and particularly subsequent comments from listeners about parents who surreptitiously help with homework. There's a lot of confessions there. Mm-hmm. Takes me back to my own secondary school days in the late 1980s and early 1990s, especially to an incident that occurred in what used to be called, in old money, the lower sixth, now year 27 or something like that. Prompted by your own recent confession, I now need all these years later to fess up to my own misdemeanor. I need to start explaining, Father Simon, I have absolutely no head for maths, science, or anything remotely technical. Not a clue. The arts subjects, English, history, history of art, they've always been very firmly in my bag. I like performance art, I like mime, I like French Renaissance theatre.
I mean, come on.
I like Jonty.
Jonty and his performance art. Right, go on.
Having said that, I actually quite enjoyed studying and did pretty well in GCSE physics, mainly because we had a really kind, funny and enthusiastic young teacher. We call him Mr. Smithers Jones. And as a result, in a decision I now simply cannot explain, I unfathomably and utterly foolishly signed up for A-level physics. And this is where my tale of woe really starts. For some reason, my sixth form, a gritty northern comprehensive on the outskirts of Doncaster, seemed to have an obsession with using multiple teachers for A-level subjects. I had three teachers for one A-level. Well, two in reality, as the third, our headmaster, Dr. Sloth, only turned up for about two lessons in 2 years. And A-level physics was no exception, where the aforementioned Mr. Smithers Jones of GCSE fame taught us the mechanical side of physics. Formidable and fearsome Geordie, who was also head of physics, called Geordie McGeordie Face, taught us the electrical aspects. Clearly, we just changed some names here.
I worked that out, yeah.
This is Jonty's suggestion of names, by the way, not mine. After only about 3 weeks of term, if that, it rapidly became apparent that I was completely and utterly out of my depth when it came to A-level physics, and an immediate switch to A-level geography was required.
Okay.
Cue all the geography students and geography teachers saying, we're not a soft option, you know. A meeting with the affable head of geography, they're always affable, who'd already taught me at GCSE was arranged, and yes, no problem, you can transfer across, was the word. Likewise, my meeting with kindly Mr. Smithers Jones. I can see you're really struggling with the mechanical aspects of physics I'm teaching you. That went according to plan. Then, though, have you spoken to the head of physics? Asked Mr. Smithers Jones, i.e., had I spoken to the formidable and fearsome Geordie McGeordie Face? Well, in an absolute, total out of depthness, here's my confession. This is what I have to tell you. It was my dad who was, in quotes, helping me, for which read, doing all of my A-level physics homework. Dad couldn't really do mechanical physics either, hence Mr. Smithers Jones noting how I was struggling. But here's the thing, Dad's degree was in electrical engineering. Hence, for my electrical homework, I was actually doing really rather well.
No.
So, and here, Father Simon, you need to do a Newcastle accent.
Oh, good. Oh, brilliant. Here it comes. Rescue it now. There we go.
Dinner, give it up, because you think you canna do it, thundered Geordie McGeordie Face
right
at my meeting with him. There, it's one of the accents I decided not, just not
oh,
to
really?
Do.
Okay.
I don't want
really?
To offend people.
No. Mm-hmm. Can't help but feel that the nation wants you to do this, yeah. this accent.
It ain't going
to
happen.
Oh,
sorry
really?
About that.
Okay.
Well, it's really taking me a hugely disproportionate amount of effort, sir. I fumbled. Naturally, not wanting to say my real reason for not doing well, but doing okay in electrical physics was that it was being completed by a graduate of electrical engineering. In other words, my father. Well, Father Simon, I eventually convinced him by quoting Jacques Brel, talking about the mime legend Etienne de Croo, and explaining my love for German expressionist art. At this point, he sort of went slightly glazed. I switched to geography, and I ditched the Wheatstone Bridges, whatever they are, for the rest of my life. Well, I looked them up. As you know, Matt,
yeah.
the Wheatstone Bridges are electrical circuits used to measure an unknown electrical resistance.
Resistance,
yes,
yeah, that's right.
As any
yeah.
fool knows.
Yeah.
But do I feel I ought to seek forgiveness both for misleading Geordie McGeordie face and from my dear and sadly recently departed dad, who for about three anxious weeks of term in 1991 had to frantically dredge his memory banks to do his son's wretched physics homework? Do I think I should? Well, I do think I should. So John T, with his performance art and his love of mime, all of these things absolutely perfectly engineered for Matt's top humour. He will pronounce in just a minute, but it's another getting my dad to do the homework confession. Sister Susie from the pub, what do you say?
Well, see, John T, the problem I have here is you got your dad to help with the homework that he was good at, which is great, that's easy for him, but then you also made him do the physics homework that he wasn't so good at. Now, why couldn't he just do that? That's a poor dad.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason,
yeah.
I'm not going to forgive you, John T.
I know.
Because you shouldn't have got your dad to do both homeworks.
Also insulting to geography students and geography teachers everywhere. Just, I can't do it. I know. I'm going to transfer to geography. They'll let me in. Brother Matthew.
How unlike someone called Jonty to be living off daddy's accomplishments. I have a question for Jonty. Why weren't you doing an A-level in performance art? Which basically involves, do you have a black beret? Do you have a black jumper? You're in. There's your A-level. Boom. So I am going to say, not forgiven, Jonty.
Really?
I mean,
ooh.
Come on. With your jaunty and your daddy doing everything for you and your lack of berets, I'm not going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
The podcast.
Jezza, thanks very much for tonight's tale. Father Simon and the Allied Jury for Moral Fortitude. My plea for forgiveness relates back, as a PG certificate, by the way, relates back to an incident that still fills me with abject horror. For rugby union in England, the acknowledged end of season jamboree was the Middlesex Sevens at Twickenham in late May. And me and other hardcore members of the Chichester Rugby Club Gladiators made it our annual pilgrimage to celebrate the conclusion of another fine season. One of our 30-plus beginners was Dobby, 6'4" tall and around 20 stone with his belt done up, the sort of character that every team needed, practical joker of the highest order, always up to some mischief or another, and valued an integral part of our gang. 90% of the ticket holders for this event were well-off, ex-public school, ex-military or city bankers, judging by the posh vehicles, the posh voices, and the magnificent spreads laid out on their banquet-sized tables.
Yeah.
By 11 a.m, the tables were laid and the pop of corks, followed by loud Tarquin-like guffaws, resonated around the place.
Yeah.
I'd arranged the Gladiators' annual trip as usual, and upon arrival at the car park in our minibus, we were directed to a small grassy area at the edge with a little stream running alongside and willow trees on the opposite bank. Other cars were joining us and they were setting up their base for the day, exactly like we were. We were soon joined by two Range Rovers, the occupants all dressed immaculately, with the gents in Panama hats, blazers, ties, the ladies elegantly attired in bright summer frocks, their voices like their champagne flutes, cut glass. They all then began laying the table with a huge array of wonderful dishes brought out carefully from the ample boots of the Range Rovers. Beautifully arranged platters of sandwiches, exotic salad, sliced rare beef, dressed crab, a whole ham, a Victoria sponge, a crystal bowl of fresh fruit salad, and the pièce de résistance, a whole salmon dressed in lemon slices laid on an oval bone china platter, set right bang in the centre of the table, all covered tightly in chrysalis cling film. China plates, silver cutlery and linen napkins were laid precisely in position, and two bottles of champagne in an ice bucket. I hate picnics. This compared to our shabby table, adorned not with fine food and champagne, but with 24 packs of strong ale, even stronger lager, and several boxes of Co-op wine in boxes.
Yeah.
Our dress code was practical. The boys in rugby shorts, gladiator shirts and trainers, the girls in jeans and T-shirts. Now, you should know, Dobby, as ever, was with us and would inevitably be a big part of the day. The only difference this year, this is where it takes a slightly unexpected turn,
okay,
was that this year he wasn't actually with us in person, having tragically and suddenly passed away the previous June. Nonetheless, he was with us in spirit, plus a little bit more than that. As already mentioned, Father Simon, Dobby was a large man, so his ashes filled two urns with a bit left over. I said it took an unexpected turn.
Yes. I mean, I didn't see this one coming.
One was in pride of play, but you know where it's going. One was in pride of place on the mantelpiece at the home of Megs, his widow, and the other she had brought with us this day to Twickenham to scatter them underneath the North Stand posts after the competition had ended. This actually did happen, but that's another confession altogether. In the meantime, he was placed in the middle of our table, lid off, so he was at the centre of our fun and attention. Now, the posh lot had moved aside from their table, enjoying good banter and a second glass with another party next to them, when from absolutely nowhere, a mini cyclone ripped through the willows behind us, sending our empty beer cans tipping over and rolling noisily across and off the table. It also sent quite a large amount of Dobby rocketing up and out of the urn and spiralling in a vortex skywards. No. We all looked on in jaw-dropped bemusement because as quickly as the gust arrived, it had gone. Silence. Then 5 seconds later, a familiar sound, like the patter of rain on a window. Dobby had landed. He had settled himself in a light grey, gritty film all over our neighbour's spread. Oh. The beef, the salads, the ham, all of it, nothing spared. The centrepiece salmon even, fared worst of all with the fresh lemon slices arranged decoratively to imitate its scales, now dulled to a matte finish. Oh. It was a disaster of epicurean proportions. We slowly turned our backs to disassociate ourselves, but from over our shoulders we could hear disconnected words of disappointment, such as, "Oh, well, that's a shame." "It has been dry for a few weeks. All that work, just take the lemons off. It'll be fine." And without the champagne surely helping, they sat down and tucked straight into what was, after all, just a slightly over-seasoned feast.
Yes.
With the urn successfully retrieved and our own basic lunch finished, it was time to head into the stadium. So, Father Simon, obviously I have to ask for forgiveness, not from Dobby, for losing just under a quarter of him to a car park, as there was still plenty left for the North Stand.
Yes. Oh, good. Good.
Nor, Father Simon, do I seek forgiveness for showering our neighbour's banquet, as I had nothing to do with that. It was an act of God, therefore out of my control. No, Father Simon, I seek forgiveness for not telling the Range Rover crowd that their magnificent spread was in fact ruined by our great mate Dobby, not just a few spoonfuls of hallowed Twickenham soil. Anyway, it was so you know, it's we've had similar tales before, but that was a particularly, as Jezza says, a disaster of epicurean proportions. Sister Susie, the voice of production, what do you say?
I just don't know. Like I feel for him because, you know, who takes a whole ham to a picnic?
Ugh.
It's just, but I also feel like maybe you should have said something because it's, it was making me feel ill. No, I can't forgive him. Can't forgive Jezza. I'm sorry. No.
Brother Matthew will definitely forgive.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Obviously I'm going to forgive. but I mean, you do have to wonder at the wisdom of of unscrewing the top of the urn. I'm not sure I can completely go along with that one.
No, I think that's definitely right.
Right. Okay. I mean, I'm not the biggest salmon fan either. So frankly, anything will improve that day. But maybe, yeah. I mean, no, I'm obviously going to forgive because it's a bunch of toffs next door with their Fortnum and Mason and unlucky. Yeah, that's what goes around comes around, Herbert.
Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast on Greatest Hits Radio.
Jez's confession, lipstick, powder and rugby, which revealed a very biased point of view in the people's verdict.
And finally, Anonymous says, I forgive Jezza and I fully agree with Brother Matt. Clearly cottoning on to the fact that if you say you fully agree with me, I will read you out. That's how it works.
That's how shallow you are. If any of these confessions have jogged a memory, a sinful memory from your past, send it in, please. confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Let's have a look at the correspondence here. You can email confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. We might read them out in future pods, if indeed there is a future pod.
Well,
there'll be one more, won't there?
There will be one more. We'd like there to be more.
Well, it depends whether people like what we're doing.
That's true. If we get enough people downloading them and enough people giving us 5-star reviews, then we might be able to continue.
Is that what it boils down to?
Well, yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It needs to be worth my effort.
It's got to be.
It's got to make it worth my
make
time.
Send money. We'll accept used onces.
Wow.
So, I don't even know what that is.
£1 notes, so you can't do them.
Onces?
Yeah, onces.
Never heard
used onces.
Used onces.
Yeah, so look, if you've got any sort of rogue money lying around the house, put it in an envelope and send it to Matt Williams.
Yes, yeah, no, do send it.
Anyways, confessions@greatestheatsradio.co.uk. What have we got here?
So I've got an email from Keza. I swap my husband's coffee jar each week for a lesser brand and have done for 3 years now. I've been tipping the value brand into the more expensive brand jar. Still not being caught out, and I feel terrible as he says he loves this brand of coffee that he's drunk for years. Kind regards, Keza.
See, I don't think that's acceptable because coffee is very important.
It is. No, I'm a big coffee snob, I have to say. I'd spot that a mile off.
Okay.
Would you?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I've got an email from Nigel.
Okay.
Who says, hi, Simon & Co. Right then. For around 3 to 4 years, I know my partner has been claiming to buy me my favourite coffee.
Oh,
but
what?
I know 100% that she's been buying the cheaper own brand coffee and swapping it into the high-end brand jar and leaving me to believe she spent £7.50 per jar. Well, I must confess that she thinks I've fallen for it for that period of time, but I laugh to myself at each shopping day as I make a strong point I love my expensive coffee, but I play along and allow her to believe she is saving £5 a week. I'm confessing, as I saw an email purely by accident, that she confessed to you that believes she tricked me.
Okay.
Well, my lovely, I've known all along.
My lovely.
Well, my lovely.
Right.
Okay. She didn't convince. She wasn't found out.
Two sides of the same confession.
It is. But does that mean he's also buying the expensive coffee and keeping that to himself somewhere? I don't know. Is he just having not very good coffee all the time? That you're coming out of this rather badly. Because if you're going along, I mean, laugh along with it the first time, obviously, but then you're just eating, you're drinking not very good coffee.
Well, maybe he's got a secret stash. Maybe he's like taking £5 and just collecting them and then buying the expensive.
That seems like a marriage based on trust to me, Suze.
I think this is quite good. I quite like the idea of, you know, if you're the aggrieved party, if you're like the other side of a confession, we would like to sort of pair them up. I think this is quite a good thing.
It's nice.
confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Now, Matt's favourite bit of the podcast. Well, this is kind of a summary of some of the confessions that break the rules.
X-rated, here we go.
Mainly because they involve laxatives in some form. Okay. We start with Ian. Ian, I know that the subject of your prank was a bully who was demanding your share of your lunchtime snacks with him, but that doesn't make it okay to do a mischief in the packet before you gave them to him.
Oh, my goodness.
I think this is taking me back to Oh, he's done a whoopsie.
He's done a whoopsie.
In
excellent.
The packet.
Some mothers do have him referenced there, everyone. Yeah. Tell your kids.
That's definitely did a whoopsie. AJ, what can I say? A dinner party with all your neighbours maybe wasn't the best place to describe in detail how well you know your new next door neighbours and their nighttime activities, especially as on the day in question, or the night in question, the husband was away on business.
So, oh, right. So, okay.
So you can tell that, well, you can probably get to the heart of what we've been sent, but we're just disguising it just a little bit.
Yes, we are. M writes, well, it might have been an innocent April Fool's prank, M, but you really ended up wasting 999's valuable time when the teacher who witnessed you throwing a mannequin out of a third-story window of your all-boys school thought it was an actual student who'd crashed onto the courtyard. Not good, M. No, not getting through, sorry.
And RS, just because... Here we go. Just because diabetic sweets aren't actual laxatives, okay, it doesn't make it okay that you purposefully gave them to your workmate who kept stealing your sweets. It still had the same outcome and is therefore banned, just to be absolutely clear. If you have a confession like these, we don't want them.
Well, we sort of, I mean, you know.
Okay, you can read them then.
I'll read them
then,
yeah.
Do you want to read them?
Absolutely. Do I?
Anyway,
yes, I do.
It's confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Time to revisit Matt's favourite so far.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's a sporting one and a case of mistaken identity. Here is David in Bristol's dad confession. I don't like cricket. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Simon and the Tolerant Trinity. I have to take you back 14 years, back to another continent, and the story of my father's transgression down under. My father is retired and is a keen follower of cricket. Over the years, my mother has learned to appreciate leather on willow, and she accompanies my father on his various travels. In 2006, and to tie in with celebrating my father's 70th, he decided to treat himself and my mother to a trip to Australia to follow England in their Ashes series against Australia. With Australia having already taken an unbeatable 4-0 lead in the series, they moved on to Sydney for the final match, where they managed to get tickets for the first day's play for the 300th Ashes Test match at the famous Sydney Cricket Ground, the SCG. My father, you should know, is quite gregarious, and during the first day's play, he got talking to a fellow Englishman at the bar and struck up quite a rapport, so much so that my mother didn't see him after lunch and spent the afternoon session watching alone as my father and his newfound friend watched the standard England batting collapse together with a Shiraz in hand. My father eventually returned to his seat and my mother at the tea interval, where he enthusiastically said to my mother he had a new chum who had secured tickets for day two. It transpired that his friend had advised that he would leave a couple of tickets at the gate for them to collect. Well, the next morning, my mother and father entered the SCG and made their way to the gate to collect their tickets. My father informed the lady at the booth that they were picking up tickets that had been left for them. The lady asked them for his name, and my mother said, Hodgson. Well, the lady leafed through a large pile of envelopes in front of her and, having not found anything, replied, I'm ever so sorry, there are no tickets here under that name. Crestfallen, my father responded with, oh, well, not to worry, and began to turn away. But my mother grabbed his arm and said, well, maybe he didn't know your surname. Did you tell him your first name? Yes, says my dad, I did. We did introduce ourselves. And with that, turned back to the lady in the booth. Do you have any tickets in the name of Howard? Which is my father's name. The lady had been listening to their conversation and again leafed through her pile of envelopes. Aha! She says, here you go, sir. They thanked her profusely and walked away from the booth, then opened the envelope to discover two tickets. They made their way to the relevant gate, presented their tickets to the concierge, were shown into the pavilion where they began to climb some steps. They held their breath as they climbed up to what were pretty good seats. It was main members' area with a sea of blazers and floral dresses. Being of a certain age, my mother and father were suitably attired, did not feel out of place. After an hour of watching Flintoff reach his half century, they were aware of a slight hubbub going on behind them. To their right, where they looked, there was a small group of people looking their way and pointing. My mother and father settled back and thought no more of it. Shortly afterwards, a very smartly dressed man with an earpiece approached them and asked to see their tickets. With a creased brow, my father proffered the pair of tickets, and the man then scrutinized them quite intently. Can you come with me, please, mate? The man asked.
Oh.
Is there something wrong? Sorry.
What was that?
It's standard. Come on. Is there something wrong? My mother inquires, and the man just says, if you could step this way, please, madam.
What?
You don't know where he's
apparently
from.
We're now in Johannesburg now, are we? Right, OK.
If you could step this way...
With the rest of the members watching intently, they followed the man back up the steps into the pavilion where a small group of people were gathered. One of them was a very smartly dressed man, slightly toothy, bald, with silver hair at the sides and a tiny bit familiar. The man asked how the pair had come into possession of the tickets, and my father recounted his adventures the day before and the morning's conversation with the lady at the gate. The explanation brought a combined ah from the group, and the smartly dressed man broke into a smile. He reached out his hand to my father and said, hi, John Howard, Australian Prime Minister.
I'm
pleased to meet you. Then David unnecessarily just puts in brackets, regular accent here, please, Simon. I don't know what that means. Anyway, I just make John Howard sound English. Anyway, my mother was mortified and embarrassed at the same time, and my father immediately launched into a speech to state their innocence. The Australian Prime Minister, for it was he, waved the speech to a premature close and said, I don't want to spoil your day. Please keep the tickets, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your time. Looking at the man with an earpiece, he said, I'm sure I can find somewhere else to sit. I mean, this is pretty impressive for a Prime Minister, don't you think? Anyway, my mum and dad were shown back to the Prime Minister's seats and continued to apologise the whole way there about the trouble they'd caused. They were soon quietened by two glasses of champagne that magically appeared courtesy of the Australian Premier, and they settled down to the usual England collapse and Australian batting grit. On behalf of my father, I would like to seek forgiveness, not to the Australian Prime Minister, who took it all in very good humour and could have the pick of the seats, nor to the rest of the posh members of the pavilion who were treated to a scene that probably still provides conversation in such circles. No, my father would like to seek forgiveness from the poor lady in the ticket booth, who probably got into a lot of hot water for handing over the tickets belonging to the most important person in Australia to a couple of poms, a crime for which she may still be serving some time. Anyway, that's the tale about how David from Bristol's dad and mum were sitting where John Howard, the Australian Prime Minister, should actually have sat. I have to say, everyone comes out of this pretty well, but let's check in with Sister Susie in the pub. What do you say?
Oh, I really like that one. You know, fair play. You got some really nice seats. You met the Australian Prime Minister. Like, what more do you want? But am I the only one wondering what happened to his new best mate? He promised him some tickets.
Good point. Yes.
Like, what happened? And also, how many glasses of wine or beers did Dave's dad Howard have to buy to get him that? So okay. I'm going to forgive.
Okay, everyone's
Howard
forgiven apart from the secret friend.
But apart from the secret friend.
What do you think, Brother Matthew? What are you saying on today's story?
Can it possibly be the case that you leave tickets for the Prime Minister just under their name at the window? Yeah, just under his name. We'll just leave them in an envelope with his name on them. Oh, well, I'll try that next time I need to get into a sporting venue, definitely. I'm obviously going to forgive because this is, I mean, A, it's just a great tale, and as you say, everyone comes out of it well. And frankly, if there was a cricket test series to miss out on as an England cricket fan, it was that one, because it was woeful for England. So frankly, they've all suffered enough. So yeah, definitely forgiven.
Simon Mayo's Confessions, the podcast.
Tonight's tale comes from someone who signed The Naughty Nurse. Today's confession from The Naughty Nurse. Simon and the collective forgivers of sin. I know, that's her choice. That's how she wishes to be known. Okay. Firstly, I would like to point out that the heinous sin that I'm begging forgiveness for took place in the late 80s, when times were different, as Matt likes to say.
Yeah, they were.
It took place on the glorious island of Jersey when I was a student nurse. The nurse training undertaken at Jersey School of Nursing was very strict. Most of us lived in the nurse's home, commonly known as the Nun's Retreat, a tedious building attached to the hospital. Boys weren't allowed in our rooms, but they were allowed to visit us in the communal living room. But they had to be out by 9 p.m. 9 p.m. sharp, The main doors were locked, and if we were still out, we had to do the walk of shame through accident and emergency. Certain student nurses seemed to have more practice at this than others, mentioning no names, Phoebe Johnson and Mary Graham. The nurses' home was always a popular invite when any groups of boys came from out of town, whether it be sports teams, a golf tour, but especially when any members of the armed forces descended on Jersey. This particular balmy summer evening, it was the turn of the British Army, who set up a big mash tent, as it was known. After getting ourselves ready for a night out, a group of us nurses wandered up to the aforementioned mash tent to where a not-so-gracious party appeared to be in full swing. After making our way to the bar and starting to enjoy the ambience of the evening, my eyes and those of a tall, rugged, well-built redhead, which I have always had a penchant for, locked across the crowded mash tent. Hello. It was not long before we had made our way into each other's company and were enjoying the evening together. Soon after 10, the drinks reception was ending, and the tall, rugged redhead asked if he could walk me home. We appeared to be enjoying each other's company, so I agreed. On the walk back, I declined the offer of going for a drink as I was working the next day. I was thinking, well, this could be the man of my dreams, as one does when you're in your mid-20s, or at least I did, until he started becoming, well, to put it mildly, a bit of an idiot.
Oh, no.
What a surprise. He'd almost arrived at the nurse's home when he blatantly invited himself in for a cup of coffee. I explained that, one, I didn't drink coffee. Two, by this time I thought he was such a muppet that even if he was the last man on earth, I didn't want to spend any more time in his company. Thank you very much. And three, I explained that members of the opposite sex could not gain entrance to the nurse's home after 9 p.m. He replied to me very smugly and very arrogantly, "I am in the SAS, I'll have you know." And I am specially trained in the art of entering buildings.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, I thought, well, this idiot is not being told any of the secret ways in. So I pointed to the window of my room on the 7th floor and said, "That's my room. If you can find your way in, I'll make you a coffee." After which, I walked away with a casual glance over my shoulder and a "nice meeting you, night then," and proceeded to do the walk of shame up the ramp towards A&E. As I got about halfway up the ramp, I heard a loud crash and a bang and a string of expletives, which I ignored and just carried on up the ramp, giggling away to myself. I returned to my room and enjoyed a reasonably early night before my early shift with the fearsome sister the next morning. Upon arriving in the ward the next day, I was aware of a sense of unsettlement, if that's a word. This was compounded by one of the night shift students, a friend of mine, just staring at me. As we got to the male orthopedic bay, the sister said words to the effect of, "We don't know who the patient in seabed is. All we know he's in the army and he fell down the drop by the porter's cabin whilst trying to follow a student nurse into the hospital." She seemed to scan the room with those eyes coming to rest on each of the four students. She then said he must be very important because some very important army men are coming to pick him up very shortly. And at that moment, I watched in horror as about 7 senior-ranking army officers walked into the ward, and the hunky redhead, still in his hospital gown, was wheeled past the office by army officers, never to be seen of or heard of again. He didn't look like the possible man of my dreams. Now he was all bandaged up and looked like he was from one of the Carry On movies, to be perfectly honest. As we left the office, my friend on nights looked at me, shaking her head. She said, "I knew that was you as soon as we were told it, he was following a student nurse." So the forgiveness has to be for A, the nurses on duty that night who had to patch him up and look after him. Yes, I was that student nurse. My apologies. The senior members of the British Army and other members of the Army on Jersey at the time, I hope I didn't ruin your plans. And lastly, the unfortunate soldier, who, if he was a member of the SAS, seemed to have forgotten the basics. I hope his injuries healed quickly, and I hope this incident did not put his career in jeopardy, even though he had turned into a complete idiot. Much to most of my colleagues' belief, I did manage to make it through my training and have had, and I'm still enjoying, an excellent and varied career as a registered nurse. Well, the naughty nurse has got a smart speaker. We'll check in on the verdict of Sister Susie from the pub. First of all, what do you say to the naughty nurse?
I think that was excellent naughtiness. I think that, you know, he was just being a bit of an idiot, really.
Yes.
And I think you just got rid of him very successfully. Hopefully he wasn't too injured, but, you know, for that, just him being a bit of an idiot, I'm going to forgive. I'm on your side.
OK, Brother Matthew, what do you say to the naughtiness?
Well, I want to know whether has that line ever worked? I'm in the SAS, my dear, you know. Oh, yes, I'd like to come up for a coffee. I'm not sure what the entry requirements are for the SAS, but my guess is if you can't get up the top of a porter cabin, you're not getting in. So, unlucky sunshine. I'm definitely forgiving Naughty Nurse, definitely.
That was Naughty Nurse's confession. You probably think this confession is about you. It was forgiven by pretty much everyone. Unlikely sunshine,
I think. Absolutely, always a highlight, I think.
You're probably right about the chat-up line, hi, I'm in the SAS, because by all accounts, all the people who actually are in the SAS never talk
never
about
say
it.
Never say it.
It's just something that is a part of them, but they never...
Are you allowed to talk about it? Is it? It's not like the James Bond and it's a secret, is it, SAS?
You can talk about it with other people in the SAS because it's pretty much open there. You can go, Brian, you and I are both in the SAS and that's okay.
But they couldn't say it to you?
No, they couldn't
say it to me because I'm not... Or am I, Suze? You wouldn't know, would you?
That's right, because then they might have to enrol you.
Absolutely. Maybe when I leave the studio, I rappel down the side of the Greatest Hits building. You don't know, do you, Suze? You don't know.
Is that how you leave?
That is.
You go
that's
up
how
to the roof
and then helicopter call them in.
Anyway, thank you very much. If you want to send us a confession, confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast from so you don't miss the exciting and slightly twisted next instalment of the Bumper Summer Confessions that we're bringing to you. And also it'll help us decide if the Confession Podcast should come back on an occasional basis or a permanent basis or not at all if you absolutely hate it. Don't forget hear...
But
what?
No
one hates... No, don't even
Nobody
suggest that.
It.
Don't suggest
no, everybody loves it. Just tell us how much you love us. Because we're quite fragile and insecure,
yes,
as I think you mentioned last time.
Yeah.
Don't forget you can hear our whole radio show every weekday from 4 on Greatest Hits Radio, but not until August 30th. First, when we're back on. Meantime, you can join fabulous Richard Allenson, who's doing the show whilst we're away. Meantime, Matt has this message for you.
Goodbye.
Susie has this message.
Goodbye.
And I'll leave you with another top jingle. But which one? I know, I'm going to go for number 12. Here we go.
Simon Mayo's Confessions, the podcast. Greatest Hits Radio.